Pianist Bobby Timmons probably never thought that some of the notes that he was tinkering with would be the lead in for one of the great jazz standards of all time, Monin, which became the title track of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers' 1958 album. Lee Morgan is on trumpet, Benny Golson on tenor sax, Bobby Timmons on piano, Jimmy Merritt on bass, and of course, Art Blakey on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to be philosophical today because it's necessary. We're going to be talking about how governments, in particular our government, we're going to be talking about our government, in particular the insanities of our government, become our realities. It's the same thing. So we'll be talking about the various ways in which we are compelled to, and even we choose to on our own, to accept the excesses of government in what we are told is a democratic society. A couple of things I want to note before we get into the meat of it. We had Reverend Al Sharpton meeting with the family of, it's so sad, the family of the young man who was killed in Crown Heights, and it sparked a great community outrage. Saheed Vassal is the name. And he was said to be holding a gun. This is what the police said. They got reports of somebody menacing people with a gun. And they apparently agreed that he was A, menacing people, and B, he did have a gun. And so they shot and killed him. Now, the community says they know who this person is. They know who Saheed is. And they know that he's a bit off, but he's known in the neighborhood, and nobody assigns any kind of violence to him for the years that they have known him. In fact, in my recent trip to New York, one of the places I went was on Utica Avenue. My honor guard, the guys who picked me up at the airport, took me to Utica Avenue, and we looked at the changing nature of Utica Avenue, where now it is unparalleled assault on real estate, and places are being chopped up in order to maximize rents and so forth. So the neighborhood has changed quite a bit. And as you know, Crown Heights is a place that I'm very familiar with. I wrote a six-part series on Crown Heights called Crown Heights, A Lull Before the Storm. Oh, how many years ago now? Almost 30 years ago. And we could see then the beginnings of a problem. The problem remains the same. I'm talking now about our realities. The reality of life in Crown Heights is the same dynamic as Israel and Palestine, which, I mean, it's the same dynamic. One group coming in, taking it over, that's the Hasidic community, and basically making all the rules, getting all the concessions, all the deferential treatment, and doing whatever they wish to do in that community. And there is now the third element, which is the police acting sometimes as the people who are keeping the black folks in line. And death is part of that. I should mention that the police aren't the only ones killing blacks. We do have blacks killing blacks, and we have a history of violence between the Hasidic community and a black community. The Hasidic community has its own police force, if you will. Their own so-called community patrol. But their community patrol, it appears, is able to do whatever it wants to do. I was almost attacked once in broad daylight. Coming up on Albany Avenue, and there was a community patrol. They have those little, like the little carts, little golf cart type things. And the guy was driving this very slowly and hindering traffic. There was a bus behind me honking at me as if I was holding up traffic. I wasn't. And then I, in turn, was honking at this guy to get out of the way, and he wouldn't. He wouldn't move to the side and let traffic go. And then, he came at me. And I came right back at him with my club. At the time, you had the club that we put on the steering wheel. I disassembled it, so I took the more lethal part of it. And I was not going to sit there and be a victim. So it came to that. And he backed away. The bus driver himself almost got out of the bus. He was yelling from the bus for the guy to just get out of the way. But this was the mentality. So here's what's going on in my head. This community is already designated to be no more. It is not a community for all people. It is a community for some people. And right now they have their own system, including their own courts. They do not go through the regular court system. They go through their own rabbinical court. And so dedicated is a district attorney to justice that inside of the district attorney's office is a special office dedicated to adjudicating cases involving Hasidic Jews only, strictly. And it's interesting that this came out after, this came about after all of this blow up in Crown Heights, including, by the way, the total and complete destruction of the 71st precinct, because a police officer was questioning a Hasid about a possible crime. And within a half hour, you had hordes of people descending on the 71st precinct, which, by the way, was occupied by police at the time, of course. This is the local station house. And they tore it apart, limb from limb, everything they could gut out of the walls, the wiring, the communications, everything destroyed utterly and completely. No arrests. And the whole precinct was rebuilt. And before the precinct was rebuilt, we had the governor of the state running down to the precinct to apologize. Apologize for the police officer who was doing his job. The lieutenant governor went, the city controller went, the mayor went to apologize. So we have two different realities going on there in Crown Heights, but it actually comes down to one reality. And that is that the blacks who live in Crown Heights are temporary residents. Eventually, they'll all be moved out. That's the whole plan. Because years ago, when Fred Richmond, the convicted child molester who has since died, he and Ted Silverman, who was then the council member representing that area, had it entered into the city charter that Crown Heights, this area, when they say Crown Heights, they don't mean where blacks live. They don't mean that the black people with any power. They mean specifically the Hasidic community is to be given all the rights and privileges of an emerging nation. It's there in the record. So that you have a city ambulance paid for, that this was the order of the day. You had 24/7 round the clock police protection in front of their headquarters. You have illegal tunnels. Nobody's ever inspected that. One day, I guess, when buildings cave in on themselves, we will find out how many illegally constructed underground tunnels have been dug to connect what they consider to be important buildings for their purposes under Eastern Parkway, under the streets of New York. There are tunnels there so that they can escape from one building to another, or they can avoid completely the vagaries of the weather. This is crazy, but this is the reality. And you get the message when you go to Crown Heights that you're just temporary. Anyway, I'm coming to the Sharpton aspect of it. As we know, we discussed Al Sharpton's role in Sacramento. We haven't heard since he met with the family and since the funeral of Mr. Clark. I'm forgetting his first name now. But so there's a meeting, and now there's silence. There's a meeting, and now there's silence. Well, what happened? They had a forensic pathologist who issued a report. The report found that he had been shot, Stefan Clark had been shot 8 times, mostly in the back. And we have heard no more. Why? What's going on there? In as much as you're taking on the task of representing the community, then I would think you will have to apprise the community, keep the community in the loop as to what's going on. But we're not getting any reports. We're not getting any reports. The meeting that Sharpton held over, the weekend with the parents of Mr. Vassell, we still don't know also what's going on there. I'm having, it seems, some difficulty with my system here. This is a major annoyance to me. So I seem to have lost contact with the studio. So let's take a break and I'll come right back. Okay, I see you. All right. On top of the craziness of Florida's inconsistent electrical grid, you have a problem with your host not having the technical savvy I'm supposed to have. But anyway. Okay, so you meet with the city. In what capacity? You see, we now have to get things really clear. I'm happy, and it is a great thing that there are people who would step in the leadership capacity. Usually it's because the families ask or the families reach out because there is what? No leadership. So they have to take help wherever they can get it. This is a matter, and I'm glad that you will see that, it's nice that the community is rallying, but that's the nature of that community and most communities. When something particularly egregious happens, they rally. And they come to the aid and to the support as best they can to the people experiencing this kind of pain. So that is happening. But where we need the leadership is not Sharpton. I'm not suggesting that he has no place in this at all. Quite the opposite, as I said. In the absence of any kind of leadership, whatever comes will do. And frankly, Al Sharpton has popped up in some of the most critical cases at the most critical times in New York City. So I understand that people would reach out to him for help. But this is a matter for the city council. This is directly within their purview. They have the authority, they have the power to compel the police commissioner to answer these questions, to compel the local precinct commander to answer questions. They have the power to call hearings. They have the power to insist on a proper and thorough investigation. They have the power to call in the feds. They have the power. It's not the governor. It's not the state attorney general. It's the city council. And precisely at a time that we have the largest number of people of color on the city council, we have zero power. How do you explain that? And an unwillingness to exercise the power and authority vested in them. This is what is so irritating. Al Sharpton is not the city council. And here's the sad part. He has more pull than the city council, all of them combined in this matter. We should be seeing all kinds of movements being made at the city council level to get somebody to definitively answer some questions here. This is not the first time somebody has been harmed in Crown Heights by cops or the Hasidic community or by others as well. Not the first time. And it's also not the first time that they've passed the buck. I remember when Gavin Cato, a young kid, playing in the street, everybody plays in the street. They even have signs to watch out for the kids and whatnot. This entourage came barreling down the street. One of the cars kills Gavin Cato, seriously injures his cousin Angela, but nobody stops. They keep going. And they have all the trappings of the police. They have that, the sirens and whatnot and the flashing lights that law enforcement has. How come they haven't? You have an ambulance in your entourage, but you don't take the kid to the hospital. Okay, so be back to this question. You can tell I'm agitated about it because this has been going on for years, decades. You have a bunch of mealy-mouthed cowards in the city council and in the state legislature as well, who will not see this as an important issue on which to give specific attention. You're going to wait till Al Sharpton shows up, and whether he's inclined to go this way or inclined to go that way for his own purposes, you have nothing to do as legislators elected to comprise the largest percentage of people of color in the city legislature, the city council. And you have no way, nothing, you have nothing to contribute to what is clearly a crisis situation. You don't call the police commissioner to account. You don't have a hearing immediately. You don't move to fire the police commissioner. You don't move to fire the police captain. You don't move to even call the mayor of the city to account. And yet you are the funding source for the police department. They didn't do it when Eric Garner was killed by a bunch of rogue cops. They didn't do it when the Central Park Five, is actually seven young men in Central Park, were about to be railroaded and in fact were. Nobody asked questions, and they talk about reforms, and they leave the reforming up to the police to reform themselves. These people are joking. And the community is joking by refusing to move against these people. How many more deaths must happen where an investigation has been initiated? Yeah, okay, but the person is dead under very highly suspicious circumstances. I remember in the heat of the Crown Heights explosion, same cast of characters, except we could add David Dinkins, who was then the mayor of the city of New York, and the same cast of characters who pop up every time somebody's killed. And their job is to chill out the neighborhood, chill out the people. Do you know they objected to me being in the room? And I'm doing my job reporting. And I have a photographer. They objected to me being in the room. They objected to me being in the room when Amadou Diallo's parents and a group of African chiefs met with the Justice Department, specifically Eric Holder, to discuss what is going to be the Justice Department's role in finding out how come it is possible for the New York Police Department to see nothing wrong with firing 41 shots at somebody who was just trying to go home. He was at the door. They mistook his keys for a gun. So that meant they could shoot him 41 times and shoot at him 41 times. How many more of these cases are we going to get? Which is one thing. But look at the pathetic response of elected officials. You know, they say privately or when they are in a community meeting how distressed they are, but haven't done a damn thing. So now the community has to get very aggressive and move to take them all out. They're useless. Take them out. People have to beg you to show up. And this is a crisis. People have to ask and plead with you to do something when this is your job. People have to act really grateful that you might even attend a community meeting or take their calls. We are the ones who are joking around. You see those Parkland students? In short time, they got this thing in good order. They're not listening to all the parsimonial speeches that the elected officials are giving. They're beyond that. The power equation has changed. And they're very clear about that, both sides. Elected officials understand that the so-called kids that they dismissed routinely are now to be respected, are now to be paid attention to. But this situation in Crown Heights is particularly galling to me because we have been through so many incidents. And the answer is always the same. Send Al Sharpton. He'll fix it. He'll fix it. And you talk about a community. Have you seen any reaching out of the Hasidic community to the Caribbean community at all? No. They're very clear. This is not your neighborhood. This is our neighborhood. We're in charge here. This is despicable. And we have to insist. Not, we're not asking people to do favors anymore. Any person who has been elected, who has not yet played a major role or significant role in moving along the essential questions in this case as to what happened, who is responsible, and how do we move against a department if it looks like poor training is the issue? You fire a whole bunch of people, get them out. They're not useful to the community. Instead of now we are talking silly stuff, really. It's so silly. Well, what were the police doing? When did they know? When did they get reports? That's not the job. That's not the job for our citizens. We should not be expected to conduct our own investigations, which of course we should do, but as a counter to one that whatever it is, we want to know what you got. But you see, they play this game. In Sacramento, for example, we know that they're heading toward a settlement. We know there's going to be no trial. We know they're not going to hold any police officer accountable. We know this. We know that it has been agreed to. In theory, if not in substance, we know this. And what they did to shore up the settlement part is they beat the cops, they beat the city to a police report, or a forensic report, I should say, not a police report, a forensic report. That gave them an upper hand. How long it will last, we don't know. But you notice there's been nothing but silence, which means they're busy trying to figure out what would work, what's the magic number. But that is not justice. That might be justice for the lawyer involved. It may be justice for Sharpton as he defines justice. It may be, everybody else's definition of justice. But the people's definition of justice is that somebody has to be held accountable and somebody's got to pay. That's the bottom line. That's justice. You do not get to kill a young man in the prime of his life, father of two, and walk away and still have your salary and your pension. You don't get that. You have committed a crime, and your badge has been literally your shield against the law and the application of the law. We got to stop that. We have in the Central Park case. I know I'm digressing, but it's important. These men, young men, everybody knew. I was at the paper at the time. One of the best investigative reporters, Peter Noel, got on it right away, said these kids were not even there. Bogus evidence, totally lies. Used by the prosecutor who knew they were lies. She knew that none of the so-called evidence against these young men, none of it was true. The judge had to have known. So you had prosecutorial misconduct, you had judicial misconduct. You certainly had police misconduct, all to railroad these young men into prison for the rest of their lives as a casual decision. The prosecutor now enjoys a very high-paying position doing what? Teaching law at Columbia University. So, yeah, I'm a little upset about these things. And I'm upset that the community takes this stuff. It takes this insult. It takes this level of wrongdoing routinely. People show up, they protest, and then it's done. There's a method to how they handle these things now. Where's our method? Where is our method to assure justice? Al Sharpton? That's not justice. And again, just so I'm not misunderstood here, Al Sharpton shows up, and this is the point I'm making, the community is so bereft of leadership that Al Sharpton is the guy who has to show up everywhere. Somebody gets killed, call Al Sharpton. What does that have to do with justice? What are we hearing? We know, we see the press releases. I see them all the time. Al Sharpton is meeting with the parents of Shahid Vassell. Okay, that's great. Now, what does that do for justice? How does that answer the qu basic questions here? And what is the long-term commitment? We can't look to Al Sharpton to solve police brutality and police killings. The community itself has got to do something about its lethargy. This is your own community, and you're tolerating this level of disrespect. And you cannot tell me that it is okay that we go through this cycle every single time and we don't get any further along the whole line of, well, what is our claim to fame? We disrespect ourselves, we disrespect our communities. And only when something is especially egregious, we'll show up for a protest and then we're gone. I say again, somebody seriously needs to consider, and this is the work of a person with great substantial legal expertise, but not necessarily. But somebody who can put together a book, some kind of guideline as to what is the appropriate response when something like this happens. Not to wait until it happens, but to know intuitively once it happens what you're supposed to do. Until then, we'll keep coming together for the short duration of a protest after somebody has been killed. And we just chalk it up to, well, we can't do everything. And I have so much to do. We have all kinds of excuses for why we will not affirm. And we will not protect our own integrity. That bothers me a great deal. So they may not want to call it the Israel-Palestine question that we have in Brooklyn, but it is. Whose neighborhood is it? Whose rules apply? Who is to be respected? Who has rights? Who is supposed to be supported even when wrong? We've got to resolve that issue, and we've got to do it fast because it's getting so much worse now. Everywhere. I was reviewing some of the stories I've done over the years, and I got tired. It's the same story. I got tired of people being killed for no reason whatsoever. Nothing happens. Nothing happens. And lives lost, and it's just like, well, we move on, and that's it. But maybe that's the way you want it. But it affected me so deeply over this weekend. All these cases a mentally ill young man. This is the Baez case in the Bronx. The mother calls because he hadn't taken his medication, he was getting out of control. She calls for help. He is on the second floor of the fire escape. The cops are actually looking up at him. He has a pair of scissors. And the cops actually reasoned that he was threatening them. So they shot him on the second floor of a fire escape. And nothing happened. I was in the house of the apartment, a small enough apartment in Brooklyn. After two cops came and shot a young man, also having mental problems. His elderly parents, his mother was also shot. She called because he didn't take his medication. She's an elderly woman. And she just thought it would have been the right thing to have the police come and help her administer the medication to him because he was beginning to be agitated. I was there shortly after they shot him dead. He had a sister who was an invalid, bedridden. Bullets are flying all over the place. Because these cops, although they got a call for an emotionally disturbed person, they come into the apartment and they started shooting. His mother comes down the hallway saying, trying to tell the cops, no, not, don't shoot, nothing is wrong with him, nothing like that. I call for the help, I call for the help. And they just shot her too. Nothing has happened. Nothing. I've seen Eleanor Bumpers, an elderly woman in the Bronx who apparently was having a moment. She was mentally ill. And then found out that they were trying to evict her from her apartment, supposedly for non-payment of rent. When I checked, she was not late with her rent. It was the Department of Housing Preservation and Development that supposedly was supposed to pay her voucher, did not do so on time. So they sent two police officers, and I talked to them. And they were totally out of it. They said they'd never expected things to turn out that way. They knocked on the door. She wouldn't answer. She wouldn't come to the door to receive any notice. So they put into place their usual plan, which is to take a seat. That was their response. We just sit down at the door. Whenever she shows up, you serve her the notice. Then they told me they had no idea where a SWAT team came from. But there were at least eight guys in the SWAT team, armed to the teeth, moved them out of the way, entered Mrs. Bumper's apartment, and you should have seen what that apartment looked like. In a very small place where they used a shotgun, blew a hole in her chest. Supposedly because she was late on her rent. You see? And we sustained that, and we've done nothing about that. Nobody lost their jobs. Nobody was even fearful that they would lose their jobs. I could go on and tell you some of the cases that are so atrocious. This is not right. And at some point, people will have to say, you get what you deserve. Because if after all this time, we're doing the same nonsense over and over and over again, and you call Al Sharpton and that's the end of it, he'll fix it. There should be a campaign mounted yesterday that any legislator in Crown Heights who has not yet affirmatively moved in behalf of Saeed Vassell should be put out of office. That's right. I know it's harsh, but that's what is needed. They ought to go. They have no use. If they can't guarantee life, and they have the power and the authority to do it, and they haven't done it in decades, what is the point of having you there? You're not doing it at the local level. You're not doing it at the state level. You're not doing it at the federal level. You're waiting to see what your masters tell you you might be able to do. As you can tell, I've been pretty agitated all weekend over this. And I see the same thing happening with this Trump administration, where we know we have a crazy president. We know that. And yet we continue to act as if that couldn't possibly be the case. We know that he's not fit for this office. And it's become a kind of, that's Donald. He's a kind of mad genius. Yes, taking us all to the brink of war. In a little over a year, this man has done so much damage, not just to the country, but in the eyes of other countries. Corrupt administration. You're barely there. You've barely gotten your seat warm. Everywhere in this man's administration is corruption. Corruption. People stealing money like crazy. People don't care what the rules are as long as they make money, and he's at the head of the line. You're making deals, you're cutting corners, you're doing whatever it is you want because this is your candy shop and this is your turn to enjoy all the sweets and to dole out to your favorite people whatever it is they want. We have a total kleptocracy. We're looking at thievery, unparalleled, in your face, unapologetic thievery. And we still pretend that we have a democratic system of government. The Republicans are corrupt. The Democrats are corrupt. The third parties also are corrupt. And we are supposed to pretend that somehow, if we work hard enough to convey to them how they ought to behave, what they ought to do in a democratic society, they'll do that and we'll all live happily. No. We have a corrupt government, thoroughly and completely corrupt. And it is going to lead us right down the road to ruin. And that's not far away. You have a situation. Let's talk. I mentioned the insanities. Their insanities become our reality. Look at Puerto Rico. On top of the storm and on top of the neglect of Puerto Rico, they're going to close about 200 and plus more schools in Puerto Rico. In other words, you could say the school system has been gutted. And yet there's order. There's civil order in Puerto Rico and in Puerto Rican communities stateside. people are behaving themselves. In the face of a clear signal that they're coming after you, and they're coming to put your lights out, and they're coming to take your children's future. Everybody's well behaved. Nobody wants to make noise. Nobody wants to take on the work of standing up for their children and grandchildren. I mean, really, how is it that their madness, their insanity becomes our reality and we live with it? Or we grumble here and there, but we take zero action, none. And then we get angry. We get angry that this is the situation. They're not hiding it. This is the situation. You're marked for annihilation, one way or the other. Your neighborhoods are going to vanish. The things that are deemed to be too good for you, the return of slavery is just around the corner. You won't have a job that pays you enough to support a family or even just yourself. You won't be able to afford rents. You won't have health care. What do you think is going to be the case for public housing? They're getting them ready for middle-income people to come back to the city. They will fix up the apartments just in time to change all the rules of public housing and to let the people who are now in the suburbs, who can no longer afford that, come back to the city. You just have to find a place to go. Maybe Connecticut, someplace in one of those cities that are on the brink. But this is madness. And we have people in Congress who can't figure that out. And who, on top of that, can't figure out what to do about it. We better get serious about this. Because you see what the plans are. You don't have to reach to the point where it is actually happening to figure it out. You can figure it out right now. And do something. We talk all the time, but talk is cheap. Talk is worthless. What are you doing? That's the charge for all of us. What are we doing? I thank you for indulging me today in this rant, but I needed it. So you performed a really good service by giving me a break and letting me vent. But I think you understand, because I think you share some of it. The feeling of frustration that we are living the reality imposed upon us by people who are insane, a system that is insane and wrong-headed and racist and unjust. And we calibrate our lives accordingly. We are going to be living in the world they envision for us. We adopt it and are doing the job they expect us to do, which is nothing. Wake up, people. It's time. It's time. Thanks so much for joining me today. And again, I thank you for indulging me, because I really needed to get this off my chest. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. We'll meet again tomorrow and we'll continue the discussion. Bye bye.